home in 26th place. In snooker, Antrim native Mark Allen and Ronnie O'Sullivan are in action in the UK Championship final. The last session has just started. The Rocket is leading Mark Allen by 6-2. The first to 10 frames wins. And that's your news and sport at 7:06.
Dublin's weather on Sunshine 106.8.
Brought to you by MSL Park Motors Skoda. Displaying our stunning range of 191 Skoda models at MSL Park Motors Skoda. Visit msl.ie.
Staying dry this evening with clear skies. There might be the odd isolated shower at times. Temperatures dropping to about 4 degrees. And that's the latest from the Sunshine Newsroom. We'll have more in an hour.
Sunshine Meets.
In association with the Charleville Lodge Hotel in Phibsborough, home of the award-winning White Moose Cafe.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Hello there and welcome to another edition of Sunshine Meets with me, Elaine Stenson. My guest this evening has been a dominant presence in Irish music, both home and abroad. She has played a huge role in bringing Irish music to a global audience, and the San Francisco Chronicle has described her as one of the best interpretive singers around. Mary Black, welcome to Sunshine Meets.
Thanks, Elaine. Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Great to have you on. And there's so much to get through, Mary. Obviously, you're one of the country's best known artists, but I want to go back to where it all began for you. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how it all began, how it all started for you and your music career?
Well, I was born and reared in the inner city Dublin. A proud Dubliner, and my parents, actually my father came from a very remote part of Ireland, up in the north-east coast of Antrim, a place called Rathlin Island. So he came to Dublin and lived in Dublin for 52 years and loved music. He played instruments. And my mother was an inner-city Dublin girl who loved singing and all that. So I suppose the music came from both sides, if you like. And we were born and reared in Charlemont Street. I had three brothers and a sister. Francis was the baby, and two older brothers and a younger brother. So music, my older brother, Shay, who'd be the eldest, started playing, picking up instruments that my father had lying around the house. And eventually he moved on to guitar with my mandolins. Daddy played a bit of fiddle, and he got his guitar, I think, for his 10th or 11th birthday. And that was it. He started collecting folk songs. And I, even at that young age, I would have been 5 years younger than him. So if he was 11 or 12, I was like, what, 6, 7, 8, around that age anyway, I started to sing. And he'd get me up to his bedroom where he had a reel-to-reel kind of tape recorder. And he'd get me, because his voice was beginning to break. He was kind of a young teenager then at that stage. And he'd get me singing the songs. And I learned an awful lot of songs at a very young age. And I just knew I loved to sing. Singing for me was like, it made me feel good inside as a kid.
And you have such a beautiful voice. When did people discover that you were so talented and your voice was so powerful? And, you know, was it recognised when you were that young?
Well, I was aware that people thought I was a good singer, and I was in a choir in school. It was a very, very well organised choir. I went to St. Louis in Rathmines, and they had a choir called the Young Dublin Singers, which I was part of. So I was nurtured in that, learning about harmonies and choir singing, which I loved as well. I mean, and once I was singing, I was kind of happy, and I was in my happy place, you know. And I'd sing myself to sleep at night. It didn't matter what they were, whether they were hymns or Christmas songs or any song I could sing, I'd sing. And I kind of sang myself to sleep most nights. So it was there, and it was prevalent in my as part of who I was, even at a young age. Now, I never ever dreamed that I would be a professional singer. That was never on the agenda for me. I started to sing with my brothers as a teenager then. There were folk clubs around Dublin, and we'd go in and we'd put our name down, as you did. That's what you did back then. And you'd get up and you'd sing two or three songs as you know, one of many guests. And everybody got a shot at it. And then there'd be maybe one well-known name that would, you know, top the bill or whatever. And that was kind of where I got a little start. I mean, it was the first time I sang into a microphone and things like that. Other than that, it was just singing around the house and singing at parties. My father used to have what he used to call hoolies in a Sunday afternoon, and everyone would be doing their party piece. We all had one. But, you know, it was great grounding for me. The choir was great. My parents always encouraged music and loved singing and playing themselves. So it was just part of growing up.
And were you shy at all? You know, to, when some children are shy, they don't want to go in front of a crowd? Or was it just so natural for you because it was such a big part of your life?
Yeah. No, when it came to singing, I wasn't shy, but I was nervous when I started to get, I suppose, in my mid to late teens then, when it got a little bit more serious. I would be very nervous before I would sing. Even right into my 20s, I would be. And I remember Joe saying to me, look, if it's making you this... I used to get an upset stomach and everything because I was so nervous before I'd go out and sing. He says, making you this kind of sick and you're this nervous, is it really worth it? And then when he asked that question, I said, yeah, it is worth it. So I had to kind of deal with that nervousness and anxiety that was around it. And because once I started singing, I felt better.
But it was pre-nerves.
Yeah, it was pre-nerves. It was pre-nerves. And but I did manage to get over a lot of that, although, you know, even now I'd still get a little nervous, depending on the actual scenario of what it is or where I'm singing and who I'm singing to. But most of the time now I'm fine. Like, I've been doing it for so long.
And did you have any professional training when you were younger?
No.
No?
No, I never got singing lessons or anything like that. As I said, it's just the choir and encouragement that way. But no, I never did, no.
And you started entering competitions and becoming more and more successful. And when did you kind of realise this is going to be my career?
I can't remember one defining moment that happened. I was singing and I was working. I always chose jobs after I did my Leaving Cert. I chose jobs that didn't kind of tie me down too much. I knew that if I got a really good job in the civil service or something, I might have difficulty leaving or getting time off to do something if it happened and if the moment arose, you know. So I would do waitressing, anything that would subsidise my big love, which was music and singing. I think one of the turning points for me was Christy Moore had a series of programs from the Abbey Tavern in Howth, and it was televised, and it was Christy Moore and Friends, and he asked me would I sing on one of those shows, which was a real, really big break for me. And that would have been my early 20s, and that was very important. Subsequent to that, I recorded an album with the label that my husband Joe was working in. It's a family-run business. So we got to record my first solo album, which would have been about 1982. He's giving me the thumbs up there. I'm very bad on years. But that was my first solo album. And that really did, well, it wasn't an overnight success by any manner of means, but I suppose it put me on the map, so to speak, in Ireland, and people became aware of me. And then in 1983 I joined Aidanan, and I was with them for 3 years, an amazing traditional band from Galway, and they brought me abroad with them. They had popularity at that time in America and all over England and Europe, and we did festivals, and I'd got a lot of great experience working with Aidanan. So that really set me up for my own solo career. After 3 years I left them and was recording and, you know, released By the Time It Gets Dark, while I was even with Dan. And so, yeah, I was doing kind of both at the time, and I was singing with Declan Sinnott, who's a great guitar player and was with me for 13 years and produced all the albums. Great, great musician. And that's how I started out, I suppose. That was the beginnings.
And how did you meet Joe?
I met Joe at a football match. I knew of him before I met him, actually. A friend of mine was she used to fancy him, so she dragged me along to these football matches where he was.
Okay.
And we knew each other for a while before we went out, but
so was Joe involved in music?
And well, Joe was in the business side of it. His father had a record label, Dolphin Records, and then when we got together, and you know, he was saying, would you like to record an album? I said, well, I don't know if I want to be on Dolphin Records, because it was more ballads, you know, the Dublin City Ramblers. I have nothing against any of those, but it wasn't what I was doing. And so that's how Dara was born. Dara Records was born, because he was second generation and he was starting a new label, and I became one of the first artists on Dara label. So I had that added advantage, really, to have a record label that was believing me and behind me, even though they're just an Irish label, but it was brilliant. And then as time went on, the next few albums, I think No Frontiers was probably the turning point, that album, for me, because I started to get calls from record labels in America and Japan and Australian all over, really. And that was where, I suppose, my international career started in earnest, you know.
Yeah, and that album, No Frontiers, spent more than a year in the Irish Top 30. Did you have any idea it was going to become so successful when you heard it and when you were recording it?
Well, I remember when we were recording in the studio, there was an excitement about the album, and you know, we had kind of, when I say we, I mean myself and Declan particularly, had found our niche and where we wanted to be, because I kind of came out of a folky area of music, but I also wanted to incorporate other, I suppose, styles within what I did, which is what we managed to do. And you know, it was kind of more contemporary, an album that I had, you know, when No Frontiers came along, a lot of them were Irish, young Irish songwriters who were, you know, writing songs, and it was an exciting time, and I would have probably been the first people to record their songs, many of them anyway, people like Jimmy McCarthy and Noel Brazil, great, great songwriters. And so there was an excitement, and there was a feeling that this could be something big, you know, even within Ireland. I never really thought in terms of the world, but it became part of the world musically then.
And what kind of reaction that was so massive, that what surprised you the most, like globally?
Well, I suppose I always felt that my music was particularly Irish, and that maybe people in other parts of the world wouldn't necessarily get it the way we got it. But you know, it became an international, it was accepted sound. I suppose it had a folkiness, and lots of well-known folk artists did have success globally, so I suppose it wasn't that unusual. But I think, I don't know, just struck a chord with people abroad. I'm obviously Irish people abroad too. I had a huge following of Irish people all over the world who would know me from home, but more and more it was growing amongst people from, like, Americans who had no Irish connection, for example, or, you know, English people all over Europe. So it was, and Japanese, I mean, they didn't even know where it was from, I don't think. They just heard the music and connected, you know.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break now, but before we do that, we've asked you to choose a song that means a lot to you. And what have you chosen for
us? Well, I've chosen the title track of that album, No Frontier, written by Jimmy McCarthy, an amazing Irish songwriter. And it just lifted me to a new level musically, and brought me to many places around the world, and I'm very, very grateful for that. And this is the song.
Brilliant, yes, one of our favourites here at Sunshine Radio. Here's No Frontiers.
If life is a river and your heart is a boat, and just like a water baby, baby, born to float, and if life is a wild wind that blows way on, and your heart is a million dying to fly. Heaven knows no frontiers, and I've seen heaven in your eyes. And if life is a bar room in which we must wait, for the spark,
Sunshine Swing with Tom Cole Jr.
Join me tonight from 8 p.m. as I play timeless gems from the kings and queens of swing who gave us the songs that have shaped the world. That's Sunshine Swing with me, Tom Cole Jr. tonight from 8 p.m.
Brought to you by the Glenside Bar, Restaurant and Function Rooms, Churchtown, your number one Christmas party venue.
Sunshine 106.8.
It's me, Santa, and I'm finally here at Nutgrove Shopping Centre. You can come along for a free visit and gift every weekend throughout December. And every Saturday, there's tons of family fun, including festive workshops, and it's all free. Plus, more than 60 fantastic stores for the best in Christmas shopping, all at Nutgrove Shopping Centre, with plenty of free parking. Visit nutgroveshoppingcentre.ie for details.
When leaving the building site, you want to make sure you go to a place that has a large range of products in stock. You want to go to a place that has your order ready on arrival. A place located on the north side of Dublin with friendly staff. Somewhere with great value and same-day delivery service. You want Grange Builders Providers Baldoyle. Grange Builders Providers, Dublin's number one builders providers. Call them on 839-0193. That's 839-0193. Or see grange.ie.
Now, I know what a tasty burger tastes like, and the good people of Bobo's do too. They serve gourmet burgers that are 100% Irish, 200% delicious. Visit Bobo's, your neighborhood diner at Middle Abbey Street, Dane Street, and Wexford Street, or at bobos.ie. Mmm. Bobo's sure make a tasty burger.
Sunshine Meats.
In association with the Charleville Lodge Hotel in Phibsborough, home of the award-winning White Moose Cafe.
Sunshine.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Sunshine Meets with me, Elaine Stenson, and I'm joined in the studio this evening by one of the country's most acclaimed artists, Mary Black. Mary, thank you so much for joining us again today. Just looking back at some of your career highlights, what has stood out for you? Because you've been so successful, what was your pinch yourself moment?
There's one that always comes to mind straight away, and it was after the release of No Frontiers, probably a year or two afterwards, and things were building for me in England. It culminated really in a moment where I was playing two nights in the Royal Albert Hall, and my mother came across to London just to see it, and of course it was a big deal. It's a fabulous, fabulous building, and we walked in and stood on the stage for the sound check. This was long, earlier in the day, and I remember being my breath being nearly taken out of me, because looking at the building and the size of it, it holds over 5,000 people, the beauty of it and the history of it, all of that. And I used to think about, my God, the Royal Albert Hall, it was just another world for me when I was younger. And here I was taking the stage that night, and it was being filmed, it was being recorded. It was just such a moment, and I was so glad my mother was beside me for that moment. And the two of us, there's a picture of us actually somewhere where we're just looking and, in almost shock at how beautiful and how amazing it was. And that moment has stayed with me, so that would be one of my highlights. There's many I couldn't describe. I mean, that first tour of Japan was incredible. It was such a different world for me. I mean, I hadn't really seen been to Japan ever before or anywhere like it, and the people were so lovely. They didn't speak a word of English, and before the tour you had to send them the set list so that they could have the translation on one side of the page of the song and then the English, and then they could understand what was behind the meaning of the songs. And they were crying, and they bring gifts. At the time I had three small kids, and I had to buy another huge big bag with all the gifts that people who came to see me brought. That's what they do in Japan. They give you little gifts and little toys for the kids. And I just loved it. And it was a moment too, I was kind of saying, wow, this is really another part of the world that they connect with my music. And I was just blown away by that.
And all the anxiety that you used to get, the pre-nerves, did that kind of get a lot better at this stage when you became more successful? Yeah. Or were the crowds getting bigger? Did you feel under a bit more pressure?
Yeah. There's always a certain amount of pressure and I think expectation when you have success or not, partly successful, that the next time you come back it's got to be better, it's got to be bigger, it's got to be whatever. And so there is that kind of pressure, and I suppose I've the initial nerves I had when I was younger, I had to take myself aside and have words with myself and said, if you want to do this, Mary, you're going to have to learn to deal with this anxiety that you were feeling. So I did really work hard on that, and that got better. There is pressure, without a doubt. And then when you're trying to juggle life with three small kids, being a mother, a working mother, as many women out there will relate to, you have lots of guilt, and you have this feeling that why am I over here in Japan when I should be at home putting my kids to bed or giving them a bath. And you have to deal with that side of it too, which was kind of that was probably the most difficult part for me. But I got over the nerves to an extent. I mean, I think it's good to be a little nervous before concerts, or to be, you know, to really get into the zone of what you're doing and where you are and what you want to get from the night. And you know, I have worked on that, and I've got a lot better, you know.
And being a mother, did you ever think, you know, when you were away, did you ever think, actually, I'd prefer to be at home?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
At the time. On the other hand, I knew it was something I wanted. It was a calling, in a way. And I did, I mean, I was very, very careful. If I was in Japan, for example, I would try and keep it to a 2-week trip or something like that. Obviously, if it was somewhere like Australia, New Zealand, you had to take a bit longer. And I think the most I ever went away from my kids was maybe 3.5 weeks. For me, that was a long, long time. And I thought I'd never get back to see them. But, you know, I never did these tours, world tours, where you're away for 6 months or 12 months like you two or any of those. I never did that. I would go away, come home, be home for a few weeks. I'd cushion each tour by being home on both sides, and that really worked for me. And luckily I wasn't under huge pressure from record labels or management, because Joe was my manager as well. He understood completely where I was coming from. He was the father of my kids. Yeah. So like, I was very lucky to have that, and to have an understanding kind of backroom people who didn't make me do things that I really didn't want to do. But I had to really work at, you know, trying to put blinkers on when I was away and not think about them as much as my heart wanted to, and get on and do it and then look forward to come home. Great presents coming home every single time. So that was the big high for the kids when I'd be going home, the presents.
And when they obviously knew Mum goes away and she works and she's a singer. When did they realise that you were really, really successful and you were really, really famous?
I suppose it happened over such a period of time that it's my career really only started after I had my first child, Connor, and who's now 37. And it really started to take off when he was born. So, you know, by the time Danny and Roisin came along, it was grown and grown and grown and grown. And again, they took it in their stride. They would never be overly impressed, you know. I was mammy and that was it. And they'd come, I think, particularly Danny and Roisin would be intrigued by the band more so than me. Particularly Danny, when I have a memory of him lying with his hands on the ground in the gig, and you could look over to the side and he'd be there watching Bill Shandy playing the guitar, or Declan or whoever it was, and interested in the music side of it, particularly the band, not so much me. But you could see they were both taken in. Now Connor, my eldest, is loves music and plays as well, but he's kind of, he wouldn't be a performer that would stand up in front of a load of people and sing, you know. He just does it for his own pleasure. They all have music in them, which is wonderful, you know.
And so did they get excited by your career, as opposed, they didn't mind because it was sort of exciting as well?
It's, yeah, yes and no. I mean, there were times when I remember Connor saying to me, I was coming home from some trip, and he said to me, I said, I'd pick you up after school, thinking he'd be delighted. And he says, Mum, please don't wear your leather jacket and your sunglasses, because I didn't look like the other mums, and they were a little bit mortified. They'd want me just like to be like all the other mums. And little things like that, kind of, when you're that age, you want your parents look the same as everyone else's, and I didn't quite fit in that role at the time, and I was quite young when I had them too. So no, they did, and they were always delighted, and we went on lovely trips. And by the time Roisin came along, she got dragged to all these places touring, because I really said, no, I'm not leaving Roisin. I had to leave the boys, and don't have to leave her until she started getting into a little bit higher in school. I brought her on a lot of the trips, so she was a bit spoiled, really.
Yeah. And your own family, I mean, you're all very musical and you've all been successful, but your career seemed to go the most global and be the more successful. Was there any competitiveness, or was there any resentment, or was everyone supportive of everyone?
Well, no, alongside all of this, we released two Black Family albums, my three brothers and Francis and myself. We released two albums as a Black Family. Francis came 5 years behind me, so by the time she started her career, I was kind of on my way, and I was very helpful to her when she was starting out, and she came to me many, many times and asked me my advice and about certain different aspects of her career as it was happening, and vice versa. You know, like, I mean, people often used to think there might be, but there was never any rivalry, really. Frances has a different sound. I know people say there is a likeness, and there always is in families, but she has her own sound, and she has her own style of what she does as well. And I think it's fairly distinctive from mine. So it never really was a problem. The boys, I have two brothers who live in San Francisco now and have done for like nearly 30 years. So they play around the Bay Area and they do, you know, gigs and, they're not full time. They have real jobs as well, but they are very involved in the music scene there. So and Martin, my brother, plays still, and he's in Dublin. It's just lucky that we all had it, you know, to different levels, I suppose.
And following the success of No Frontiers, you obviously had Joe as your producer, and he was with the record label, so it made things a little bit easier on you. But did you feel an internal pressure to live up to that success going forward for your next album?
Always. Your album is released, and it takes it on a new status, maybe, within the climb, if you like, of my career. And you want to keep going in that direction, you know. But, you know, the music was flowing back then, and every 2 years I was bringing out another album, and it seemed to outdo the last one. And we got Babes in the Wood, we had Holy Ground came along, Circus, they were all really big albums, you know. So there was no shortage of material back then as well, and I always place a lot of emphasis on how lucky I was to be in the way of such amazing songs from Irish, particularly Irish writers, although it wasn't strictly Irish writers. And I think picking the songs that suited me and that were right for me was a very important process of my sound and what I was doing, apart from the performance, you know. But I was lucky. I was very lucky. I think I was in the right place at the right time.
And of all your material, what's your favourite song to sing now?
That's a difficult one.
What song do you get? I'm sure you get tired of singing some of them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the audience always have their favourites. What's your favourite that you're like,
Well, my favourites wouldn't be probably my audience favourites, really, because although I mentioned No Frontiers, and that will always have a very special place in my heart. And it's an amazing song, and I do love singing it. And I sing it probably most nights I perform. That and Katie, they would be the two. And of course, Bright Blue Rose, another great song written by Jimmy McCarthy. But Noel Brazil is probably another one of my absolute favourite songwriters. And songs like Circus, The Real You, Summer Sent You, I just off my head, I can't think of Ellis Island. They're all amazing songs. And I suppose they have a little bit more depth to them. I don't like to say that because I wouldn't like to undermine any of the other writers, but for him, his writing brought me, he was from Dublin, he's gone now a long time, but he brought me to a completely different place vocally. The songs were different completely to the No Frontiers and Katie's and all and previous stuff, and I was beginning to explore my voice more and do different things with arrangements through his writing. So I think all that is very important to the general, and I would give great credit to the writers, as you know. I mean, and my band are amazing. I have to say this now. I've been with them for a long, long time now. Bill Shanley's been with me now for, I think, 23 years. Pat Crowley's with me 32 years, my piano player. And, you know, like I said, a lot of them have been with me a long, long time.
So like family nearly.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break now. Once again, I'm going to play a song of your choice. And what is the second song that you've chosen for us to play today?
Well, I was trying to think. It's very hard to pick songs that mean something to you. But one of the things that happened, and one of the highlights too of my success, my career, was a phone call I got from Joan Baez. Joan Baez, I had been singing her songs as a young teen way back, so I knew of her so for so long, and I loved her voice. And she rang me to find out would I be interested in being part of an album which was being recorded live from the Bottom Line in New York, and it was all female artists that she admired, and I was one of them. Of course, I was blown away by that, and off we went, and we recorded this song together. And she actually decided that she would name that song as the title track of the album, and it's called Ring Them Bells, and it means a lot to me.
Oh wow, okay, well let's have a listen now. Thank you, Mary.
Ring them bells, ye heathen, from the city that dreams. Ring them bells from the sanctuaries, across the valleys and streams. For they're deep and they're wide, and the world's on its side. And time is running backwards, and so is the St. Peter, where the four winds blow. Ring them bells with an iron hand, for the people will know. Oh, it's swish hour now, and the wheel and the plow, and the sun is going down upon sacred cow. Ring them bells, sweet Martha, for the poor man's son. Ring them bells so the world will know that God is one. And the shepherd's asleep where the willows weep, and the mountains they are filled with lost sheep. Ring them bells for the blind and the dead. Ring them bells for all of us who are left. Ring them bells for the chosen few who will judge the many when the day is through. Ring them bells for the time that flies, for the child that cries when her innocence dies. St. Catherine, from the top of the room. Ring them bells from the fortress, for the lilies that bloom, for the lives they are long, and the fighting is strong, and they're breaking down the distance between right and wrong.
Remember those seaside holidays of your youth? Remember the sights and sounds of salty air? Remember what carefree fun you had all day long? Well, it's all still here, here at Hookless Holiday Homes Wexford, on the Hook Peninsula in Ireland's ancient east. For a holiday to remember again and again, book now at hooklessholidayhomes.ie.
One bright blue rose.
Mary Black, live at the Olympia Theatre, Saturday, September 14th. Mary Black for one night only, with her all-star band performing her favourite songs from a career spanning 30 years. This show is not to be missed. Tickets from £34.50 on sale this Friday at 9 a.m. Additional charges may apply.
Do you have a safe deposit box? If not, why not? Burglaries rise by 25% in winter months, and there were over 100,000 households affected by theft last year. Chances are you know someone this has happened to. Don't be the next victim. The answer is simple. Keep your valuables safe, out of your home, in your own private safe deposit box with Merrion Vaults. For less than €4 per week, call Merrion Vaults today on 254 7900. 254 7900. Or go to merrionvaults.ie.
Show my holiday, darling.
Before you jet off, make sure you're covered with InsureMyHoliday.ie.
We specialise in single and multi-trip cover for individuals, couples and families. Plus, kids go free with every family policy. Wherever you go, make sure we're your first stop.
City Financial Marketing Group Limited, trading as insuremyholiday.ie, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Spice things up at this year's Christmas do and get an Asian feast delivered straight to you. Linkey.ie. Now taking corporate and private catering bookings. Order now at linkey.ie. The best fresh food daily.
Sunshine Meats.
In association with the Charleville Lodge Hotel in Phibsborough, home of the award-winning White Moose Cafe.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to this edition of Sunshine Meets with me, Elaine Stenson. I'm joined in the studio today by Mary Black. Mary, it's now 35 years since your first solo album, so you've been going a really long time, but you're not finished yet. You're touring at the moment.
Yeah, I have cut back a little bit, Elaine, to be honest. I made that decision a couple of years back because, well, for many reasons, and I felt 40 years was a long time to be on the road, and I was touring. I found the touring kind of more taxing on my body, and I just said, well, do I really want to continue to be doing it at this level? So I decided I'd pull back from tours abroad, and I'd still do a big tour of Ireland every year, and we're going to do some gigs in May coming up next year. We're doing I do a couple abroad as well, sort of one-offs. I'm doing London in end of May, and then Utrecht, which is in Holland. And the good thing about Utrecht is a massive big theatre there in Utrecht, and I kind of seem to be doing it every year now, and people from all over Europe come to that because it's kind of a hub. You can get to that very easily. It's a huge train station there, so you get people from Germany, Holland, and all over Europe, really, northern Europe as well. So that's good. And I also have an interesting project that's coming up in the new year, and I'm not at liberty to say exactly what it is yet, but I'm really excited about
it.
It's a television, so it'll be a little departure. It'll be with a musical twist, but it's kind of more in kind of a presenting kind of role. So that might be interesting, and I'm looking forward to that.
Are you going to be presenting the Irish X Factor?
No. Keep guessing.
Okay.
No. It's not that at all. So that'll be interesting, and you know. I'm really enjoying having a little bit more time that I can call my own because of the cutback. I could never give up singing. Well, maybe I'm not say never, but it's part of who I am. I love singing and I love performing, particularly in front of a live audience. So that will continue for certainly for the future. Who knows what happens in the future, but for now I'll continue to do that at a smaller level. And then, you know, I have two lovely granddaughters now, which is very exciting, and I want to be a hands-on grandmother. I'm Mamo, by the way, that's what they call me, which is the Irish for granny. Since they've been born, I've been very hands-on with them, Bonnie and Fia. They're 6 and 4, and they're the light of our lives. And so,
are they Connor's children?
They're Connor's, yeah.
Okay.
No, Danny and Roisin haven't produced
anything. I was wondering.
No sign of anything there. No, and probably be a while yet, I'd say. Anyway, who knows?
With your three children, and they're not young children anymore,
no.
But they're all very musical also.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, Danny's in the Coronas.
Yes.
And they're off. In fact, he's just come back from Australia touring there, and he was in America in October. They were twice in America this year. So it's happening for them as well as in Ireland. It's been growing quite interestingly abroad, which is wonderful for them. They're looking again now for a new album, and the success has been amazing. Danny's hugely, hugely musical, and he writes a lot of the stuff, and you know, it's great to see. And I get more excited about going to his gigs than I ever would be up my own. And the same with Roisin. I mean, Roisin always had this powerful voice, and she just knew when she was leaving school that's where she was going. And I did warn them. I said, listen, lads, it's not as easy as it looks. You have to be willing to work really hard. You have to be willing to get disappointments, and it's not just about being musical. It's about being talented. It's about luck. It's about being at the right in the right place, the right time, the breaks, and things like that. So they knew with their eyes, and they went into it with their eyes open, I think, and they're doing well. Roisin's doing really well. She's a new EP coming out soon. She's gigging and she's enjoying. She's not making a huge amount of money, but she's happy.
Good. And were you worried for them because their mum is Mary Black and you're so successful, you're globally successful, and that's so hard to achieve. And you've obviously warned them, but do you think they really understood how tough it was going to be?
Well, they had their eyes set on it. No matter what I did, didn't matter. In fact, when Danny started out, we kept it under wraps that he was my son. Yes. For a few years. There was maybe 2 years they got away with kind of not knowing who the mama was. And we deliberately did that. And we managed to do it for a while, which was great. Of course, by the time Roisin started her career then, I think she was obviously his sister, so obviously the same mother. But no, I don't think they... I think, if anything, they learned from my career and they learned... You know, I have given them advice and they often... come to me for advice on certain aspects of what they're doing, and I have a lot of experience there, so it's been an advantage in many ways. But you know, they would have seen it as a disadvantage in the beginning because they wanted people to see that they were doing their thing on their own bat, you know, that they weren't in a privileged position to get where they are, particularly the Coronas, because they have such a big standing now in Ireland. They're so successful, but they did it themselves. Like, we really did nothing to enhance that in any way.
What advice did you give them?
The main thing was, I said, you have to be willing to work hard, and I said, always be nice to people, because you know, you might be on the way up, but someday you might be on the way down and you meet the same people, and you must respect people the way, and no matter who it is across the board, anybody in your crew, we're all equal. Nobody is a superstar. And I think, without even saying that, they saw that I was like that. And they are the same, you know, they really are. And I love that.
Yeah, you must be so proud of them.
Oh, I am, totally, of the three of them. They've done so well, you know.
And this is an awful thing to say, but were you surprised how successful they became?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is so tough. It's unbelievably hard.
It is hard. And but you know, being part of the journey from the days when they were just like the Coronas were just coming out of school, 17, they were banned. And the ironic thing is, our best friends were Sean and Rosie Knox, which would be Graham Knox's parents. Like, Danny and Graham met when Graham was 2 days old and Danny was 2 weeks old. So they have been friends growing up, and we are friends. So it's much more than we can. I couldn't believe that he's in there with all his best, with his best mates, you know, and they are still great mates, you know, as well as being band members. You know, now there's great excitement because there's a new baby in the band. Graham Knox has a little baby girl.
Oh, really?
Juno Knox.
Oh, brilliant.
It's the first of a new phase now.
Yeah, a new dynamic.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been lovely to just watch them grow. And the same now with Roisin, watching her career grow, seeing, you know, she's had a lot of interest from different parts of America and that as well, and people wanting to write with her and things like that. And the writing is really important with her and John, and Thanks Brother, and they co-write with Danny as well. So there's a lot of cross kind of interaction there as well, you know.
Yeah, and you did keep it quite under wraps, because I remember finding out that Danny was your son, and not believing people, saying no, he couldn't be, but he's not Danny Black. He's, you know, no, as well. Yeah. I think that helped.
Because I've always been Mary Black. I never changed my name. Even if I hadn't been a singer, I probably wouldn't have changed my name. It's just a thing I have. I like my name and I'm not going to change it to something else. Now, other people have different views on that. But so, you know, obviously the O'Reillys are the O'Reillys, and, you know, Danny is my son, but he doesn't have my name.
And you've had such an incredible career. And is there anything, you know, from an outsider's point of view, it's just gone so well and you've been so successful. Is there anything that you regret that you didn't do or that you'd like to have changed?
I'm not one for looking back and for regrets. I think I feel very blessed, and I was very lucky too to be in the right place at the right time. I mean, I was successful at a time when radio played Irish artists, and I know you are very good at supporting, and I really do want to say I appreciate that very much, because I know you support Irish music very much.
Yes, Sunshine Radio are big fans of you.
I appreciate that, and it means a lot, because it's not easy to get airplay these days unless you're top 20. I know that can be a problem for many, many artists. So I was successful. My initial career was at a great time, and I met the right people, and I was able to be cushioned by the people around me, probably Joe mostly, but, you know, so I didn't have to wear the clothes that the record label wanted me to wear. I didn't have to act in a particular way that an awful lot of young bands, you know, who are signed by big labels, have to, you know. And I do think that, and then you get in the way of disappointment, then they build you up and then you might be dropped, things like that. I think it's hard on young people, you know.
Yeah.
And they can get very disappointed and disillusioned very quickly, and it's nothing to do, it's not necessarily anything to do with your talent, it's to do with just all sorts of other aspects of career. So I think all that I don't have regrets, because I think I've been lucky. And I have had a great life, I have to say. Touch wood, and I hope it continues.
Yes. And we're talking about music today and young people and young artists. What do you think about music today? What's in the charts at the moment? I mean, there's a lot of sort of backlash. People say music, the industry's gone to...
Yeah. Well, music changes all the time. And I actually see a return to folk music. And I think the recent folk awards that were on Vicar Street, I mean, the amount of young talent that were there, and incredible talent. So I think folk music is alive and well, which is nice to hear. I mean, it's not top 20, but it's still popular music, and it can become more popular, as it was when I was younger. And I think that's make doing full circle. Even the likes of Mumford and Son and stuff, like, they have, you know, it's more about the singer-songwriter, Ed Sheeran, all those people, you know. It's lovely to see singer-songwriters doing well. It's lovely to see people who play real instruments, you know, standing up and harmonies and all that sort of thing. And I see it there. I see it. It's still there, and it'll always be there. So I don't lose hope when I hear some, you know, electronic music leaves me a bit cold, but it's very personal, and people like to dance to it, and it's young people's music, you know?
Yeah.
And that's okay too, you know? There's enough room for all the music there.
And before we go, I want you to just tell me briefly again about your upcoming tour, where you're going to be playing.
Well, I'm doing a concert for Peter McFerry Trust on the 8th of December, which is next week.
Oh, yeah.
And that's for the homeless, which, of course, Peter McFerry's fantastic work with. I'm looking forward to that. But after that, it'll be look out for me around the country in May. I'm doing some concerts around Ireland.
To May 2019.
Yeah, May 2019, which is not that far away.
Yeah, it'll be around the corner.
Yeah, and then a few other interesting things. So yeah, I'll give you a list of them. You might mention them at some stage, Elaine.
We will, of course. Yeah,
yeah. I can't give them off. I haven't got it here. Sorry.
Well, we'll definitely be telling our listeners about anything that you have coming up, because we know they're big Mary Black fans.
Yeah.
And that is where we're going to leave it this evening, folks. Mary Black, thank you so much for joining us in the studio today. And before we go, once again, we're going to play a song for you that you've selected especially for us, and that means a lot to you.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of Van Morrison, and I've been to see him many, many, many times live, and I got the opportunity to sing with him quite some time ago as well. So I wanted to finish on a high note, so I picked this song. It's called The Bright Side of the Road.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, here's Van Morrison. Mary Black, thank you for coming into the studio this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you to all of our Sunshine listeners for listening. Have a very good evening. Here's Van Morrison.
A frothy cappuccino, a latte just right. A double shot espresso or delicious flat white. Simply Great Coffee is coming to town. It helps you when you're sleepy or when you're working late. It's the perfect cup of coffee. More than good, it's Simply Great.
Oh. Simply Great Coffee. Available exclusively in selected Circle K stores.
Do you like beating the shopping rush and stocking up early on all your Christmas favourites? Then Lidl have more for you. Like luxurious Ferrero collection, only $5.99. Delicious Cadbury mini Yule logs, just $2.75. And Quality Street for only $4.99. Just make sure the family doesn't find them before the big day. Lidl, more for everyone this Christmas.
Hello, Tommy Lady from the...